Welcome to FedSoc Forums, a podcast of the Federal Society's Practice Groups. I'm Nate Kazmarek, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federal Society. For exclusive access to live recordings of FedSoc Forum programs, become a Federal Society member today at fedsoc.org.
Great. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this Federalist Society virtual event. I'm Caroline Bryant, and I'm the Associate Director of Practice Groups with the Federalist Society. Today, we're excited to host this webinar titled Cryptocurrency After the Election. Our moderator today is J.C. Boggs. J.C. is a partner at King & Spalding's Government Advocacy and Public Policy Group. Earlier in his career, J.C. served as counsel to the U.S. Senate Banking and Governmental Affairs Committees and worked for the Hong Kong Attorney General's Office. If you'd like to learn more about today's speakers and moderator, their full bios can be viewed on our website, fedsoc.org. After our speakers give their presentations, we will turn to you, the audience, for questions. If you have a question, please enter it into the Q&A function at the bottom of your Zoom window. We will do our best to answer as many as we can. Finally, I'll note that, as always, all expressions of opinion today are those of our guest speakers, not the Federalist Society. With that, JC, thank you so much for joining us, and the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, Caroline, for that kind introduction and all you do to organize this event and all our events in the Financial Services Group. So we're welcome to today's Federal Society webinar on cryptocurrency after the election. We are honored to be joined by two of the country's most respected financial regulators, Commissioner Hester Peirce at the SEC and Commissioner Summer Merzinger at the CFTC. Let me introduce briefly, starting with Commissioner Peirce. Prior to joining the SEC, Commissioner Peirce served as senior counsel to the Senate Banking Committee and conducted research on the regulation of financial markets at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, among many other roles. While at Mercatus, Ms. Peirce co-authored what I still regard as a definitive work on Dodd-Frank, the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, entitled Dodd-Frank, what it does and why it is flawed. And that was very helpful to me, Hester, over the years. I still turn back to it when I have some questions, so thanks for that. And while at the SEC, Commissioner Peirce has distinguished herself as one of the most thoughtful regulators when it comes to digital assets and cryptocurrency. And we're also joined by CFTC Commissioner Merzinger, who also worked on Capitol Hill as a top aide for Senator John Thune, the newly elected majority leader in the United States Senate, as well as a fellow South Dakotan. Ms. Merzinger rose through the ranks to serve as Senator Thune's chief of staff in Washington, D.C., and while also studying law and graduating from the Catholic University Columbus School of Law, my alma mater. Give that one a shout. So thank you both for joining us today. So cryptocurrency, the Federal Society has held a series of webinars on the subject already, and I think it's only gotten more interesting as time goes by. So Commissioner Peirce, I thought I'd turn to you first. You were recently appointed to lead the SEC's new crypto task force and issued a statement last Tuesday, I think it was, just 1 week ago today, entitled The Journey Begins, where you commented, it took us a long time to get in this mess, and it's going to take us some time to get out of it. So what can you tell us about the new task force and the journey ahead?
Well, thank you, JC, for that kind introduction, and thank you to the Federal Society and Caroline for this chance to be here today. I'm also really privileged to be here with Commissioner Merzinger, whose ideas about and thoughts on crypto-related issues, as well as many other issues, are always extremely informative to me. I love getting the chance to hear her thoughts because she takes a really careful and nuanced approach to these issues. So looking forward to this conversation. I do want to give you my disclaimer. My views are my own views as a commissioner, not necessarily those of the SEC or my fellow commissioners. We did launch a task force to focus on crypto issues. Typically, at least over the past several years for the SEC, these issues have been dealt with in a rather strange way. I always say the SEC is a regulatory agency with an enforcement arm. It's not an enforcement agency with a regulatory arm, but we've been approaching it backwards, where we've been using our enforcement division to set policy, and that has led to great frustration both for me, but more importantly for people who are trying to figure out Is the SEC their regulator? And if so, what should they do in order to move forward in a way that's compliant? And that's what the task force is trying to do now, is to try to figure out a path forward for people in this area. And that includes identifying things that fall outside our jurisdiction, for those things that fall inside our jurisdiction, trying to provide clearer guidelines so that people know what they need to do in order to comply and then move forward. And so there are a lot of different strands of what we're working on, and I'm happy to talk about those in the Q&A, but we're really trying to tackle a bunch of things at the same time, make some early progress. One thing that we did, the staff of the SEC did early on and in the first week, was get rid of Staff Accounting Bulletin 121, which had been a block to people coming into the space as custodians. And I think that will be positive. But we're definitely inviting engagement to identify the issues that we need to deal with and to suggest paths forward approaches for dealing with those issues.
Yeah, thanks for that. I know that you and your staff have always been had an open door policy and want to hear from industry and all stakeholders on how this works, because it's a learning thing for everybody. So with regard to the crypto task force, how would interested parties engage there? Is there a formal means to do that?
Yeah, great question. So you can go to the SEC's website. There's a page for the crypto task force, which you'll find easily. And there's a form there that, again, we're not trying to make this too bureaucratic, but we're trying to be efficient in the way that we meet with people and transparent. So you can either submit written comments, or you can put in a meeting request. Tell us what you want to come in and talk about, and we will try to do that. We also plan to have some roundtables where people will be able to interact with us and to put out some requests for information so that people can provide us written feedback.
That's terrific. You know, Commissioner Mercer, let me ask you too, do you have a sort of a comparable program or task force at the CFTC? I know the SEC did a recent announcement, so you may have something in the works where people can weigh in on this as well.
Yeah, no, to echo Commissioner Persons, thanks for having us today. And, I have to quickly give my standard disclaimer as well, that the views I express today are my own and not necessarily those of the CFTC or my fellow commissioners. So we are going to do very similar, kind of take a similar approach here with public roundtables. Acting Chair Pham has announced that she will have a series of roundtables really kind of focused broadly on market structure, but a lot of that is the driving force is crypto markets. And she did announce that she's going to have a CEO roundtable with a lot of the crypto companies, some of this around the idea of tokenized assets and, kind of tokenization in our markets. But again, it's this idea that this should be a public discussion. This shouldn't be regulation through what our enforcement team deem is the policy. And we want to hear from folks. We want to work hand in hand with the industry. This is no longer a world where we see industry as the enemy. Rather, they're going to be our, we're going to work hand in hand, and we're going to rely on them to help us set the appropriate policy to make sure the U.S. is ahead in these markets, and that U.S. businesses and entrepreneurs can be innovative and have these markets on our shores.
So let me ask both of you, just to kind of, I think as people listen today and folks in this marketplace, you're always trying to figure out what the SEC or what the CFT is thinking, what the agenda is. Can you share a little bit about the regulatory agenda for the year ahead and sort of what rulemaking the agencies expect to propose or finalize in 2025?
I mean, for the SEC, it is a little premature to say to sort of spell out what the agenda is going to be. Our incoming, so Acting Chairman Ueda is doing a great job, and the agency is working. We haven't stopped working, but we assume that sometime soon, if Chairman Atkins is confirmed as chairman, he'll come in and want to set his agenda. I do think that we'll see capital formation issues on the agenda, and we will see some issues, I'm sure, related to crypto on that agenda. But it that's something that we're trying to figure out now is where would rulemaking be helpful and where can we take a look at some of the rules that were proposed under the last administration but not finalized and take those off the agenda. That's also something that I'm thinking about.
Commissioner Mersker, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, kind of a similar approach. I actually hope that this is a period of deregulation. I think it's time for us to kind of take a step back, look at what's on the books. There are probably rules and regulations that are on the books that don't need to be there or they need to be clarified. I've been I've really pushed the agency to, you know, put rules in place where we are using no action relief to maybe clarify how we are interpreting a rule or where a rule doesn't work, we've just used no action relief to kind of help the market, you know, fulfill their responsibility. In those cases, let's fix the rule or let's roll the rule back. So I really hope we're going into a period of time where we're being more deregulatory than putting regulations in place. But that's not to say we don't have areas where we probably will need to do some regulation. You know, if you've been watching the news lately, the CFTC has been in the news a lot for our prediction markets. We are way past due at putting together a good rule around prediction markets and how we're going to handle those. And then I think we're going to have to maybe retool the way we handle conflicts of interest in our markets because our market structure is changing and we're seeing more and more affiliation. And so some of our older conflicts of interest rules that kind of, you know, envisioned a kind of differentiated market probably needs some update to approach what has become a more vertically integrated market structure. So, you know, in addition to kind of taking a step back and figuring out where we can maybe roll back some rules or change some rules, we will have a couple of areas that we do have to focus on with rulemaking.
So, the CFTC traditionally issued the semi-annual agenda, which can be a helpful roadmap to sort of what's coming up next. So I can't recall the cadence or when it was up next, but when it is up next, maybe you can clear that up for me. But also, is there anything in the last semi-agenda that maybe wasn't in there that should have been?
Yeah, so the spring unified agenda, I feel like we're always behind the date as when it is due. So I feel like maybe we were voting on the spring unified agenda in June. But as far as what was in there was way too much in there. In fact, I dissented on that unified agenda because we were regulating just to regulate, writing rules just to write rules. And there were a lot of rules that were listed on the unified agenda that didn't work, that were proposals where we had a lot of public pushback and they needed to be pulled. And so I think that unified agenda, you know, really doesn't help us much going into the new administration. And again, there was just too much on it, which is why I dissented when it was in front of the commission.
So I guess it wasn't really unified if you dissented, maybe some other dissents too. So when you sometimes we can look around the globe and see best practices or better practices, and there's sort of a spectrum of regulation on crypto to no regulation to just banning digital assets altogether. And there's, I don't know if there's a sweet spot in between. I spent a fair amount of time working with the UK regulators and they seem to be pretty sensible on the issue, but I just wonder in your experience, I know you've talked to other regulators around the world, what you see is maybe good practices or best practices. I throw that to both of you, maybe Commissioner Peirce.
Well, I think we do. I mean, one advantage of taking a long time on the regulatory front is that we do have the ability to look at what other jurisdictions are doing. And there has been some interesting work, you know, across the globe, Japan, Switzerland, the UK, you mentioned, there are a lot of other jurisdictions, even states in the United States that have tried things. And so we have a lot of lessons that we can draw. Europe has been very active in the sense that they came out with a fairly comprehensive regulatory scheme, which people are just now coming into compliance with. And so we have the opportunity to learn from that. In fact, I was looking at something from that was produced under MECA, a white paper produced in response to MECA, just to get a sense of, you know, what are the disclosure items that they're requiring. So there are a lot of things that we can draw from. But I think we haven't definitively said, okay, there's one jurisdiction that we can copy entirely, because obviously we're layering this on top of the existing regulatory structure, which is different in the United States, in part because we do have these two regulators, the SEC and CFTC, as well as a whole host of other federal and state regulators that might have a touch point on this stuff. And that's a little bit of a different regulatory map that we have to impose this on than other jurisdictions have.
Yeah, and I agree. Every jurisdiction is different, and that's why you see such a vast, kind of variety of approaches to crypto across foreign regulators. And so while we don't have to reinvent the wheel and we can use some of the best practices or where things have been successful, we can, you know, look to those regimes to see what works here. But at the end of the day, I don't think we can really copy and paste any one country's approach or rules or regulations to how we are going to do this in the U.S. because we are unique. And, you know, I think we're going to come up with a great way to approach this so that we see some of the business that has gone overseas because of regulatory certainty come back into the U.S. because we're able to provide the same level of regulatory certainty for these companies. But, I think we can work with our foreign counterparts to come up with a solution that works for the U.S. And to Commissioner Peirce's point, the states have been regulating a lot of the space for a long time. We shouldn't ignore that. We should look at what's worked in the states and see if that works on a federal level as well. And, you know, at the end of the day, remember that these are very global markets and we need to approach it with that mindset.
So you make a good point about, you know, the state regulation, there's other regulation out there, legacy regulation. I hear Senator Warren, Elizabeth Warren repeatedly say the Wild West, unregulated crypto markets. And I just don't buy it given, you know, there's all this legacy regulation. You've got AML, BSA, and state regulation. So I wonder if you agree with her assertion or if you think there's room for additional guidance and regulation.
I mean, I have to say, I laugh when a lot of people like to characterize the crypto world is the Wild West because there's a lot of stuff that's going on. Some of it is not good. Some of it is, you know, downright awful, right? And so this, we have this image in our heads of the unregulated Wild West. But the truth is that a lot of really interesting characters migrated to the Wild West also. And they did that because they were looking for a place where they had the ability to try new things, the ability to create a new life, right, and do something new. And I think we're seeing some of that in the crypto space too, as people have really interesting ideas about how they can improve their own lives, but also improve other people's lives. And so I like this metaphor of the Wild West and thinking about the positive sides of that. And then now we can build up a regulatory framework that still allows people to experiment and try new things, allows us to achieve our objectives as a securities regulator of protecting investors, facilitating capital formation, fostering fair, orderly, and efficient markets. Summer can, and the CFTC can fulfill their mission, but we need to do it in a way that recognizes the greatness of that American spirit that moved west to do new things.
The 21st century gold rush, right? The frontiers. Well, Commissioner,
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's west.
Yep. Yeah, I was going to say my home state was the Wild West for a long time. And, you know, some very important characters in history came from the Wild West. So I like Commissioner Peirce's point about that. That's not a bad thing when you talk about the Wild West. And I think the other thing is, again, to the point about the state regulators, I mean, a lot of these companies have had, you know, money transmitter license, or they've come under a state regime, crypto regime. And so they've actually been under a lot of different regulations for a long time. And so I think it's kind of a false narrative to say there's been no regulation in this space.
Very good. So I've got to see some questions coming in. I'm going to turn to. I'm going to ask one more question before I get to that, though. So, you know, this is crypto after the election. So one of the developments we've seen is a White House much more friendly to cryptocurrency and established a new president's working group on digital asset markets. So that's sort of a new entity that I'm wondering if you have had any interaction or anticipate collaboration with that office as we develop a sort of policy in the crypto space.
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, the landscape in the United States is complicated with lots of different potential players at the federal level. And so that is the kind of place where you would expect an administration to come in and try to orchestrate cooperation and help organize us so that we're all, you know, focusing on our areas and then coming together and talking about those areas. So I think it's really exciting to have the opportunity to work with other regulators and to do so in an environment that will be supported by the White House.
I have a question.
Yeah, this only works if we're. Oh, sorry. I was just going to say this only works if we're all speaking. We're all singing from the same songbook, and I think that's what the White House is trying to do. And I think it's a really good development for federal regulators to have kind of a central guiding point going forward.
Yeah, I think we're going to talk more about that in the second half of the hour, too, on the legislative side. It is important to have some bipartisan support in this area, and I think you're starting to see some of that. We'll talk about that later. I have a question for Commissioner Mercinger. We all agree that fraud is bad and that a certain level of disclosure should be encouraged. Our current CFTC regulations fit for purpose when it comes to necessary disclosure in crypto cash markets? And if not, should the agency consider looking at resources and experts outside the government to create disclosure protocols that have been purpose-built for crypto cash markets?
That's a great question, and there has been a lot of discussion about whether or not the CFTC is the right regulator to oversee crypto cash markets. And there have been some who have pushed back, saying that we don't have enough retail consumer protections, that we don't have appropriate disclosures. And I think those comments are really, people are missing the fact that we do have a regime. We've developed over time a pretty robust disclosure regime. A lot of that is focused on kind of the intermediary level. So we're what we call future commission merchants, FCMs. A lot of the disclosure requirements are focused on that entity. So, you know, of course, we can probably, there's improvements. We probably do need to look at how, you know, if you have a fully integrated market where there's not an FCM, how do you make sure those disclosures still are in play and provided to customers? So that's something that we need to take a look at. And I think the agency is very good at engaging industry and helping, you know, having them help us get to the right place. And so however we approach, you know, moving from markets that maybe are disintermediated to more integrated, how do we make sure that the disclosure regime that's in place right now is, you know, still in place when we get to a market that's fully integrated? And that's something that will come up in these roundtables on market structure that Acting Chair Pham is planning. And, you know, because the roundtables, obviously, we're going to be talking to industry and getting industry's thoughts on the best way to do that.
Okay, let's see. Okay, here's a question on, I guess, to Commissioner Persson about, this could apply to either agency, though. Do you think the SEC would have headed down a less regulatory path from last year's overturning of Chevron? So you're talking about the Loper-Bright decision. If that was in place already, if I understand the question properly, you think it might be a different result, or the SEC would have taken a different approach?
I mean, I think that the new post-Chevron world, we still have to see how that develops, obviously. But the SEC has always been an agency, or at least as long as I can remember, has been an agency that has had to justify its work in court. And so I think that the lesson for all of us, for all agencies, is just make sure you're staying within your authority, and that's really the safe place to be. And if Congress wants you to do something else, Congress can come and ask you to do something else. And I think that's exactly what I expect here, which is Congress is working on thinking about where the jurisdiction for some of this stuff should be. I think there are areas that are within our jurisdiction already that we can deal with. There's some that I would say are not in our jurisdiction. And so if Congress decides to give those to us, fine, but we don't have to grab for those. And I don't, I hope we wouldn't have done that regardless of whether Chevron was in place.
So I have another question from one of our own, Alex Pollack, asking if the commissioners see systemic risk issues posed by cryptocurrency that the FSOC should take up. Do you have any thought to that?
Well, so I think that systemic risk is often a term that's used to frankly pull things into the jurisdiction of maybe banking regulators that might be in our space. So I sometimes am skeptical of how that systemic risk term is used and what it's being used for at the end of the day. That said, I mean, there's some basic lessons that apply whether you're in TradFi or whether you're in the new world of this new era of finance. If you over leverage yourself, you could get in real trouble. You need to be thinking about that. You also need to be thinking that if you, you need to be adjusting your investments, thinking about not only return, but also risk. And so there's some of these basic lessons that I think people need to remember, regardless of what they're buying. But I also think that we need to underscore as regulators that this is not a place where there's a government backstop. And so, you know, I am always someone who welcomes people trying to exercise autonomy over their own finances. But the consequence of making a mistake will fall on you. And that's true of the entities involved in this space, too. We're not setting up some sort of a government backstop. That's not appropriate. And so people need to modify their behavior accordingly and really think about their risk and their return.
I have a question actually for Commissioner Mersinger regarding a discussion a little bit ago on the prediction markets. And the question is, do you think the CFTC will change course and allow companies like Kalshi to offer election event contracts?
Yeah, so, you know, we're grappling with this now. You know, based on the most recent court decision, I don't think we have a choice in the immediate period of time. You know, the agency made a decision with their last attempt at the rulemaking. I think Congress gave the agency a very clear path if we wanted to say something needed heightened review. And to apply the public interest regime, we could have listed it as a category in the rulemaking. We failed to do that. We tried to call everything gaming to make it easier for the agency to say no. And in doing so, we really created quite a conundrum where, you know, at this point, I'm not even sure if gaming is gaming. So the agency has to take a different approach. And I think election prediction markets are here to stay. There's a utility in them, you know, and you know, people who were worried about whether or not this could somehow be a place of undue influence or question the integrity of the election. And these contracts have a lot of safeguards in place to ensure that, you know, certain manipulation doesn't occur. So I think we have to, you know, carefully look at these contracts as they come online. But the idea that, you know, we can unilaterally say no by calling everything gaming, those days are over, and the commission is going to have to take a new approach. And we have to be a little more pro-innovator and understand that, you know, it might look different from what we know or what we are used to, but different isn't bad. And, you know, there are utilities for these markets, and we need to appreciate that and move forward with that in mind. You know, I have to say Congress could always come in and tell us differently. And of course, we're going to pivot and do what they tell us to do. But as far as the way the commission is going to handle this going forward, we, short of a rulemaking changing things, election contracts are here to stay, and we're going to have to, you know, adapt to that environment and those markets. And I think it's a good thing.
I see we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to be joined by Senator Lummis soon and Congressman Johnson, but I guess we still have a little time to ask a few more questions. So I like this one. Any thoughts on Operation Choke Point to debank crypto firms?
Certainly, that is a concern when our financial system is being used to shut down a particular sector. I think that's problematic. And we really have to remember that financial services are key to people's ability to live their lives in this modern world. And the regulatory framework shouldn't be used as a way to prevent certain types of entities or certain people from getting served. And so that's something that I certainly worry about. I think some of the actions that the SEC took also had the effect of driving people out of the crypto industry who otherwise would have served crypto firms. And that's very problematic.
Or grow it overseas. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, regulators shouldn't be in a position of picking winners and losers. And I think that's what was happening. And that's, you know, that's just not the approach that we need to be taking as regulators.
Mm-hmm. So, again, I think we should be hearing from Senator Lummis and Congressman Johnson shortly, but regarding the digital asset legislation and being considered both the House and Senate, I wonder if you or your respective agencies have any views on that legislation, the market structure bills that Congress was considering last Congress and will be considered. I do recall a conversation with Senator Lummis that with her bill, the bipartisan bill, that they had sought or solicited input from the financial regulator, you and your staff, I think the Federal Reserve and others, as they put that bill together and I guess are redrafting the bill. So I just wondered if you have any views on that public policy side of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great that Congress is taking up these issues and we stand ready to provide technical assistance as they think through how to approach things. So I think that's the best thing that we can do, and working with the CFTC maybe to do some of the legwork in advance of their moving forward, to assist them as they move forward with the legislation, I would say.
Yeah, and we don't generally take a position on one bill over the other, but we do try to provide, to Commissioner Person's point, we try to provide technical assistance to help Congress write the best directives they can, because the more, you know, the better that is, the easier it is for us to implement those laws. And so we do what we can to help them out. And, you know, I've been blown away at the ability of these members to not only work across party lines, but across committee jurisdiction lines, which is kind of, I don't want to say, you know, it's amazing that you have seen these committees, the House and Senate Agriculture Committees, work closely with the Senate Banking and the House Financial Services Committees. Sometimes overcoming those jurisdictional boundaries with committees is harder than overcoming party lines. And so I think it's all very positive. And all the work that's been done is just going to, you know, continue until we get to a point where people feel very comfortable with a market structure bill that can move forward and eventually be signed into law.
Of course, there's really two bills that are, well, more than two, but two primary bills. We're looking at the market structure bill and the stablecoin bill. And the stablecoin bill, it was recently introduced by Senator Hagerty and bipartisan support. Senator Lummis is a sponsor, co-sponsor of that as well. So in that bill, that either the SEC or the CFTC would be given authority to regulate the operations of permitted stable coins or their issuers. I don't know if you had any thoughts on that. We might have lost. Nope.
Well, I mean, I think, again, we defer to Congress to figure out who the proper regulator should be. So I look forward to seeing, you know, how that legislation comes out, and we will participate or not participate accordingly in the regulation.
Fantastic. Well, this is a good segue to talk about legislation. We have Congressman Dusty Johnson with us. We're still waiting for Senator Lummis to join, but two South Dakotans on the same webinar. That's That's pretty amazing. So thank you for joining us, Congressman. Looking forward to hearing your remarks. And I think maybe Commissioner Mercinger and Commissioner Peirce may be able to hang with us for a little bit. They might get some tough questions for you, but delighted to have you here. You've been active with legislation as part of the Ag Committee, and then understand you're now chairman of the Digital Assets Subcommittee on the House Ag Committee. So that's great. You've got the gavel perched to do great things in this Congress. And just turn to you to see what you might have on the agenda. I know it's early in the year in Congress. If you have anything set up yet, any hearings planned, or I did see you might want to talk about a bipartisan resolution that was introduced, was it just last week, I think, with your Democratic counterpart on the House Ag Committee, Digital Assets Subcommittee, as well as the House Financial Services Digital Assets Subcommittee. And sometimes those jurisdictional issues make things more challenging to get done, or takes a windier road to get things done. But it's a good sign, I think, to see the four of you getting together and sponsoring a resolution supporting the digital asset space.
Well, I'll try to contain my disappointment. I snuck in early so that I could hear what the senator had to say, because I thought I would learn as much from the senator as I would teach anybody. But I'll provide maybe just a couple minute overview and then subject myself to any questions or comments or indictments, certainly. I do think one of the real strengths we've had is not that having multiple committees of jurisdiction has slowed things down that much. I actually think it's been a little bit of rocket fuel. French Hill and Dusty Johnson were inseparable. I think as were Patrick McHenry and G.T. Thompson. I think all four of the chairmen really felt called to work together. We also had fantastic ranking members on the Democratic side. And Yadira Caraveo, my ranking member on the Digital Assets Agriculture Subcommittee, she lost her election, but we instead have Don Davis from North Carolina, another outstanding person. It's really because of the strength of our Democratic colleagues that we were able to get, 71 or 81 votes on the House side for the Market Structures Bill. I think there will be some changes to the Market Structures Bill. French Hill has gone from being the subcommittee chairman to being the chairman of the full financial services committee. In his place, Brian Stile, one of my very best friends, will have the subcommittee gavel. And Brian from Wisconsin, he and I, Richie Torres from New York, his ranking member, Don Davis from North Carolina, my ranking member, the four of us, as you mentioned, together introduced this sort of principles document that I think lay out what hopefully are the kind of concepts that can bind us all together. I think the prospects for both the stablecoin bill and the market structures bill are very strong. I can go into more details about what the market structure bill does, but perhaps I'll stop and see if you want me to take it any other way in particular.
Well, we have Senator Lummis joining us here too. So both of you at the same time on the call. So Senator, thank you so much for joining us again. I think we did this 2 years ago, and a lot has happened and a lot has not happened during those 2 years in the crypto space. But you were one of the first policymakers in Washington to really understand the importance of this new technology and how it can democratize access to wealth. So it's wonderful to see you taking up the gavel as, I guess, the first ever chair of the Senate Banking Subcommittee on Digital Assets. That's tremendous. Just began it. We had a wonderful conversation with Commissioner Peirce and Commissioner Mercinger. They're still on the line. They can pop in maybe to ask some questions later on or provide some thoughts. But maybe you can tell us about, again, as I said to Congressman Johnson, it's early on. And you've only had this post for maybe a matter of weeks. I'm not sure it's a whole month yet, so you probably haven't thought about the agenda for the year, but you've been thinking about this for a long time, certainly before you took the gavel. So I don't know if you have any priorities and things you want to do in the coming year, coming Congress. So thank you again for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. We have laid out sort of a sequencing of the way we want to address digital assets, starting with stable coins. So we'll be moving yet this month to a hearing on Senator Hagerty's, what's called the Genius Act. It is the stable coin bill that we'll be moving. It's co-sponsored by Senator Gillibrand, with whom, as you know, I've been working really closely for the last 3 years, along with myself and Senator Tim Scott, the full chairman of the Banking Committee. We'll be taking the new Digital Asset Subcommittee on a walkthrough of the bill, talk about the use case for stable coins, and allowing people to just go through it page by page. We'll probably do that before the hearing on that's currently scheduled for February 26th. I'd very much like to see if we could get a cloture, a successful cloture vote on stablecoins in the Senate. It would give us sort of a baseline of who has an understanding and appreciation for at least certain aspects of digital assets, and it allows us to move forward with something that we think is bite-sized and has bipartisan support. Then we could move into market structure. And Representative Dusty Johnson was, I heard, just talking about it when I came into the Zoom room. We are going to have to try to find a way to marry the House's FIT 21 with the Senate bill, Lummis Gillibrand. I think it's easy to do. When Senator Gillibrand and I saw FIT 21 start to move in the last Congress, we began to try to look at what the differences were. And we think they're fairly easily reconcilable. So we were really delighted to see the bipartisan passage of FIT 21 in the last conference. So we think that really set the stage for market structure in this Congress. And Senator Tim Scott, the chair of the Banking Committee, wants to move that right after stablecoins. Now, the chairs, Senator Scott and Congressman French Hill, are in contact about how and when to blend those bills and reconcile the few differences there are between the House and the Senate. And we'll get guidance from them once they come up with their strategy. As you know, it seems easier for the House because of their jurisdictional differences to come up with a consolidated product than the Senate. The Senate has jurisdictional boundaries among various committees that are pretty rigid, where the House seems more amenable when you've got a blended product that crosses committee jurisdictions to work together to get them to blend smoothly. It's a little tougher for the Senate, but I think it's very doable. We've got John Bozeman chairing the Senate Ag Committee, taking care of the commodities component of a digital asset structure, along with Amy Klobuchar. And so they're, I think, going to be in a position to find a solid meeting of the minds on the commodities portion of a market structure bill, whereas the securities component of market structure will go through the Banking Committee. Now, another of the great things is happening, and you mentioned you had Commissioner Hester Peirce with you earlier, is her knowledge and her warmer approach to digital assets than some of the other commissioners that were formerly in the majority at the SEC. So we have the benefit of her expertise as well as her willingness to move to a regulatory framework that has statutory legs as opposed to regulation by enforcement action, which was the problem at the SEC that caused so much heartburn for so many digital asset companies. I mean, they were spending literally tens of millions of dollars on lawyers and not moving the needle in terms of understanding the compliance that was required at the SEC. So we think that coupled with the administration, the Trump administration. You've got President Trump, who has voiced his desire to keep this industry in the United States, to allow Bitcoin mining in the United States, to have these robust industries here. J.D. Vance is on board with that, the crypto working group is on board. The new Treasury Secretary is knowledgeable about digital assets. David Sachs is knowledgeable about both digital assets and artificial intelligence. You have a very different atmosphere. Behind the scenes in the last Congress, there was so much resistance to digital assets. And it just placed a rock on all of our efforts. And now that rock is lifted. We're working in cooperation with each other. I think you'll find a better product coming out of this Congress, and it will still be bipartisan. So I'm very encouraged. And Dusty, what can you add to what you're hearing about the Senate in the House? You know, we're hearing very favorable things on our side of the building. What are you hearing?
Oh, Senator, I think you said it exactly right. I touched base with Tim Scott over the weekend, and he said the exact same thing you did, which is he and French are talking a lot, and everybody wants all of us to be involved. This is not a situation where, I mean, we all understand there's going to be turf that we all have to navigate. We get it. This is Washington. But there's shockingly, people are not really shooting each other crusty glances across a room about how dare you. We understand this is going to be bicameral. It's going to be two great regulatory agencies. And I just get the sense that we are going to get it done. We really are.
That's great to hear. This is a good example that elections do matter and leadership matters. And there's kind of a U-turn here in this conversation. So a lot of folks are hopeful that something will happen this year. It's in your good hands, maybe a little healthy competition between the House and Senate to see who gets it done first and takes the lead here. I see Commissioner Person and Commissioner Mercier are still on. So if you want to join us and not just listen in, but join the conversation, that's great too. You're welcome to. But we had a great, there's Commissioner Purse. I remember a couple years back, we had both Commissioner Purse and Senator Lovis on the same panel together. It's always a good conversation. So we heard a lot about what the CFTC and SEC are doing and thinking about in the first half hour, and now a little bit more about the policy and legislation. But I remember, Senator, you had, when you were drafting your bipartisan bill, or maybe it was a point of redrafting, you solicited feedback from the administration, from financial regulators, CFTC, SEC, probably the Federal Reserve, I can't recall, but to make a better bill. I don't know if that helped move the needle. Like, it didn't get the bill passed, but as you say, there's a different environment today than there was, you know, 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
And we definitely want Commissioner Peirce's review of this bill. We want to make sure that it's something that she can implement with her colleagues there at the SEC and is comfortable that consumers are protected to the extent that they should be. And yet, this is an industry that can move forward in the United States. The good news about Commissioner Peirce is, you know, she's very focused on that. This is not about killing an industry with her. And it very much seemed that way under the Biden administration, that was the unspoken but hidden desire. The European Union seemed to sense that because they were actively courting US-based businesses to move over to the European regulatory framework, so they had a clear regulatory framework. The expression of President Trump that he wants this industry to be alive and well in the United States gives us all a green light to work together towards that end, where the regulatory mechanisms that the U.S. Uses well can protect consumers to a large extent and yet still allow this industry to thrive with a well-understood regulatory framework. So that's ultimately the goal. I don't see a lot of a parochial pride of authorship because this isn't a very partisan issue. I see Republicans embrace it a lot because it's very freedom focused. I think that we're just more open to the notion of dovetailing a non-fiat asset with a fiat asset. I think a lot of Democrats that, just tend to have more confidence in a large central government. I get why they're not as warm to the notion of a non-fiat, either store of value or means of exchange. The ones who are very, very open to working with us on a bipartisan basis.
That's good to hear. I mean, I did see some demarcation, I think, on a partisan basis, but maybe more so in the House, Congressman, in the last Congress, and even among members of the Financial Service Committee. I think that's begun to shift, and maybe as a result of the election, too. There was folks on the Democratic side who might have been crypto friendly, but there seems to be more of them now. Senator, you had an early bill with your colleague, Senator Gillibrand, bipartisan bill, which is great. We were talking earlier with the commissioners about Elizabeth Warren's repeated comment, this is an unregulated Wild West. And we decided, maybe the Wild West isn't such a bad thing. I'm looking at the mountains behind you, it's virtual mountains, and South Dakotans on the line. So this is a good Zoom. What's that?
I said, yeah, we got a few mountains here as well.
Mount Rushmore, and
it's quite a ways away from where either Summer or I grew up, but still in the right state. I know this process takes longer than any of us would like, but I think one of the benefits of us really taking a couple of years is that members of Congress are far more educated about the importance of doing something than they would have been 2 years ago. I mean, when the senator, first introduced her bill, the IQ in Congress was very low.
Yeah.
Today it's only low, right? I mean, we really actually made some strides to the point where I think most people understand we shouldn't get wrapped around the axle about a coin. I mean, this is really about, do we want America to be the innovative environment where the blockchain technology that is going to help power every industry in the future? No industry will be untouched by the blockchain in the long analysis. How do we make sure that innovation, that investment happens in America? And it'll happen throughout the OECD countries. But how do we make sure that we're a leader? And I think people understand that value proposition far more than they did a few years ago.
And in some ways, digital assets are sort of an entry level to the whole artificial intelligence space that we're moving into. So if we can get a comfort level with digital assets and how to regulate them in a manner that suits Americans, I think it allows us to ease our way into artificial intelligence, which is going to become an absolute game changer in terms of America's golden age, as President Trump calls it. So this is a good test case for us.
I think the president said he wanted to make the U.S. the crypto capital of the world, too. And to Congressman Johnson, your comment, I know you're also on the Select Committee on China, involved a lot of national security issues. I wonder, is there a national security component here if the U.S. doesn't adopt sort of sensible crypto laws and regulation? Are we at risk of ceding the technological innovation in this area to China or other non-allied countries?
Of course we are. I mean, and the senator's got it right. I mean, AI is, that is clearly, if you have more innovation, if you have more investment on the blockchain, marrying those two different tools together, I mean, it's just going to be rocket fuel for what does the next generation economy look like. And we people do are really are hungry for a common sense, predictable regulatory environment. And I just, if we don't get this right, shame on us.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty optimistic right now. I just get the sense that Democrats or Republicans alike, not all of them, there, you had a certain number of Democrats in the House that really just wanted to have Gensler's back. And so to the extent that he was advocating a strident worldview, they didn't want to leave him high and dry. Frankly, we get an opportunity to have a little different conversation with different leadership at both the SEC and the CFTC. I'm very, very bullish about where we're at.
Great to hear. You know, I see a lot of questions coming in. One of the disadvantages of getting old, even though I have my glasses on, I can't read everything. So, but I have the advantages. We have four great policymakers, regulators here. We've got maybe 4 or 5 minutes left. I can open it up just maybe. Commissioner Peirce, Commissioner Mercer, have questions of the senator, congressman, or vice versa. I don't know how often you get to speak with one another and ask questions or make comments. So maybe this is a good opportunity to do that.
Well, Senator's got to see me more than she wants to, but Esther is not cursed with me very often.
Well, I just want to say that whatever we can do to be helpful as you all work through the legislation, which is a hard task, where we stand ready to help.
Hester, Commissioner,
I really want to invite you to help us scrub these bills. We can make regulatory statutory frameworks, but you have to implement them. And so your input is going to be invaluable to us. We don't want to send a product to you that has built-in problems that makes it an obstacle for implementation. So this is my personal invitation to you to please give us your feedback as we move forward. As you've heard, I'm not sure whether it's going to look exactly like FIT 21 or exactly like Lummis-Gillibrand. It's probably going to be somewhere in between. But to the extent that you can help us avoid causing you problems from an implementation point of view, we welcome your input.
That is so well said. And one thing that Russ and Summer and Carolyn and everybody were good at is Senator exactly that, giving us a sense of, hey, if we're going to be regulating things in a little bit different way, we're going to need some new resources to get that done. And frankly, on both sides of the aisle and on the Ag Committee, there was an understanding that we were going to have to bring some resources to the table. And you're right, these agency regulators, these regulators, their input is invaluable.
So with a couple minutes left, I'm going to ask predictions. And so we got two bills beginning the process in the new Congress, in the 119th Congress, stablecoin and market structure. Will they get done this year or within the 119th Congress? And which one first, timing? And maybe that's a question for the House and Senate members, Summer and Hester, if you have predictions too, welcome those. So maybe we'll start with Senator Lummis.
I'd say yes and yes. I think they move independently. I think we do stablecoins first and then market structure second. It wouldn't surprise me if the Senate stablecoin product move first and the House market structure product move first. But I think they both get across the finish line this year. And then we'll turn our tables at some point to looking at Bitcoin strategic reserve. I think we've got a lot of work to do on both sides of the aisle to make the use case for that. But with the other two that have been floating around Congress for the last 2 or 3 years, I think we're going to get them across the finish line.
Yes, I think that's, you know, French really envisions doing stable coins and market structures and financial services together, but it is not, I think there probably is a little bit more broad-based consensus on market structures. So I think the senator's probably right. They probably go stable coins first. We probably ultimately end up passing market structure out of the House first. I mean, it would be actually would be fun to have a good old fashioned conference committee, which we really don't do anymore for anything other than NDAA. And, you know, I just, you guys are going to think I'm such a dork, but like, on the list of things I wanted to do when I came to Congress 7 years ago was serve on a Farm Bill Conference Committee. Well, the joke is on me. We're not going to pass it. We haven't passed a Farm Bill yet. And if we end up getting it done, it probably won't even have a good old fashioned conference committee. But I would love to sit down with eight of us or 10 of us and 10 of us and just honestly kind of work through some of these things. I think it would be a hoot. It'd be old DC. I'd love it.
Well, and this is just the product for that kind of thing, because not every single person has two contradictory opinions in their own head about this subject. And so this one's a little bit easier to pick 8 or 10 people who are fairly knowledgeable to sit around and come to a meeting of the minds. I love your idea. I hope we get there.
Yeah.
It's kind of old school. Back when I was on the Senate Bank Committee as counsel, we'd actually have conferences. Hester, you probably remember some of those too, but not so much anymore. And Congressman, I know you're recognized as a policy guy, so you'd fit right in. And Senator, you've been doing this for before it was cool, you know, on crypto. So that would be a great discussion. I know that a lot of folks on this call and in industry will want to come and visit with members on the House Ag Committee, Financial Service Committee, Senate Banking Committee, and so forth, and probably with the two commissioners as well. So I really appreciate your time today. It's flown by, and Caroline's back with a hook. But this is a great conversation. Thank you all, and wish you well.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yes. So on behalf of the Federalist Society, I want to thank our speakers for the benefit of their time and expertise today. Thank you also to the audience members who joined us. Check out our website, fedsoc.org, or follow us on all major social media platforms at FedSoc to stay up to date with announcements and upcoming webinars. Thank you once more for tuning in. We are adjourned.
Thank you for listening to this episode of FedSoc Forums, a podcast of the Federal Society's Practice Groups. For more information about the Federal Society, the practice groups, and to become a Federal Society member, please visit our website at fedsoc.org.